It is now my pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Sue Ellen from Fresno. You are on.
I am on. Hi, my name is Sue Ellen, and I am an alcoholic. And I want to welcome all our newcomers. I want to wish happy birthday to people who celebrated. And my sobriety date is August 26, 1990, and I just celebrated 23 years. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. Because when you get in the store, you're going to say, that's a big deal. Okay? And my sponsor's here. I brought my sponsor, who has 42 years. And I meet with my sponsor quite often, and my sponsor meets with her sponsor. And that's because we know this program works. And so I'm going to qualify that, you know, first of all, I asked him if caffeine was forbidden, and he said no, and I went, okay. So anyway, because one of the reasons I fell in love with my sponsor is because she would use the word fuck in a meeting, and I said, I want her to be my sponsor. So I got sober in Visalia. I started at the Vintage Press and ended up at the Green Olive. Okay? And that was exactly. And then I ended up at home because I couldn't venture out very far anymore. And I look in this room and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And some people ask me some of the family friends go, you've been around for a while, why do you keep coming, why do you keep going to meetings? And I said, because I need to be there for that one person. When I came in the room, I was scared to death. I walked in down on center at a church. I was one of those people called the hotline. I got a hold of a really mean woman called Dottie. Okay? And I kept trying to talk Dottie into that I wasn't an alcoholic. Well, Dottie wasn't going to have any of that. And she said, young lady, you just need to show up to me and figure it out. And so I walked in on my own on a Tuesday night, and you guys had this thing broken out in all these tables, and all you guys were sitting around. And I was just, scared to death. I was scared to death because I didn't want to continue to drink and drugs. But I didn't know someone to be here either. So it's a really tough place to be. And so I walked in that room and I looked around and I just couldn't figure it out. And the story goes back. I had an alcoholic mother. I had an alcoholic family. And I never wanted to be my mother. So I started using drugs because that was much better. This will not be that story, but I just got to tell you, for a period there, I didn't drink. But then my mother, and then I got the whole, Mary King stuff, and I didn't drink, I didn't do anything. And I tried to do the whole marriage thing. Didn't do well there, by the way. And I did procreate like hell and have 3 children, okay? So anyway, I made a point the other day, if you really want to hate yourself, have kids, because they'll hate you right along with you, And so my mother, one night, the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous is my mom called me one night and said that she got sober. And I thought, oh, okay. And then she called another night and said, I'm drunk and I got beat up and can you help me? So I got her a bus ticket to come live with me. And that was the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that it never helped my mother. So anyway, I ended up, getting rid of the husband and start drinking with the mother. Okay? And so even though I didn't think I was alcoholic, it really, really fixed a lot of things how I felt at the time. So the story gets, all crazy, and this, I'm not going to be one of those speakers where you're going, your all heads are turning to the back and saying, oh my God. Anyway, so I ended up here in Visalia with these kids, And I did the relocation thing, and from a girl's duty note that you must ask your man where his mother lives, because if they're from Oklahoma, you're going to end up living in Oklahoma, because that's what happened to me. So I ended up marrying this guy, and from another state, ended up in Oklahoma, and that's where all the kids were, and then came back to California, because I was raised here in Palm Springs and in the Valley. So anyway, I'm back here in Visalia. And I don't say until I'm trying to clean up my life, and you know, just like the things that we do, we find the same people. They're just in different places. So I found that group of people to drink with, and I started drinking, and I became the mother that I hated with my kids. So I'll just quickly go into that little night. You know, I think it's so interesting that when you guys are reading from the book, how we make these bargains with ourselves. You know, I'm not going to drink, and then we end up drinking. But I remember I wasn't going to drink, and what's funny is that non-drinkers don't announce to people that they're not drinking anymore, you know? And you know, I mean, when we stop drinking, we're telling people, you know, this time, yeah, I'm good. I'm not drinking now. You know, and I'm just trying to convince, and at that time I was down at the Santa Fe station, trying to convince them I'm not drinking, you know? And they're all looking at me, yeah, right. Well, it wasn't but 2 weeks later, I'm back at the Santa Fe station, and I'm back drinking again, you know, because it just takes one person to piss you off, and then you're drinking again. Okay, so then I ended up getting, you know, pretty drunk, and then it was Easter Sunday, and one more time I was on a 3-day run, and one more time I kept saying this is going to be different, and one more time I detested my children. You know, it really pissed me off that they wanted to eat on a regular basis and they expected me to feed them. They cut into my drinking, they cut into, you know, one morning I got up and I was pissed off because they wanted to eat again, and so I'm going to Princess. We all go to Princess. Don't tell me none of you do. You know where Princess is. And so Princess opened up really, really early. So, and they had a donut place right next to it. So it was so ideal to get your beer, because at that time they only sell beer in the morning, and then go through and get your donut, and then you're a good mom. All right? So I'm headed home, and I see this little happy little girl running, and I swear to God, I wanted to tap her with my car, because she looked so happy. She looked like she had her life together. She looked like everything was great, and guess what? Mine wasn't. And when I saw her, I felt like crap. You know, so I went and I fed those ungrateful children of mine, and then, you know, I always say this, you know, my kids didn't get to eat at McDonald's. McDonald's would be the richest fast food restaurant in the country if they would only serve beer through that drive-thru. Okay? You moms know exactly what I'm talking about, because I would have been there. My 4 kids had eaten at Lions because they served beer and booze at Lions. You know, that's just how I was as a parent. Anyway, so I went, and that weekend morning, it was Easter, and I couldn't fix my kids' Easter dinner because I was so drunk. Now, the thing that's really cool is that the only thing that's really, that I, in these rooms, that's so amazing to me is that when you look around these rooms, first of all, I love that hugging thing. That was the coolest thing, giving all you guys hugs. Because I don't care wherever we come from in this life, we all struggle with the exact same thing. When we put a drink in us, things change for us. And they change drastically, and they never change in our favor. At least for me, it didn't. You know, and I remember the first time when I saw you guys, I thought, this looks like the DMV. You know what I mean? What group pulls such a diverse crowd of the human life? I mean, this disease has no social group that it targets at all. It hits every one of us at every level. You may look at me now, but there is, you may say, okay, you're in a nice little suit, and you look all cool and all this crap, at least I think I do, but anyway. You and I have the exact same thing, that when you pick up a drink, and I pick up a drink, and we do that, we don't know what's going to happen after that. But I tell you what, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is what did it for me. So at that point, you know, is when I had my bottom, because my daughter looked at me and she had the same hate in her eyes as I had for my mother. And that's when I called and I got the hateful daddy. And then I ended up in that room. And let me tell you what, I am the poster child of what you don't do in your first 2 years of sobriety. I came in and I did not get hands in on this program. What I did do was just keep coming to me. What I did do is not drink. But I love that saying, you can take a drunk horse thief and get him sober, and all you got is a sober horse thief. And that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to take the horse thief out of us. So, you know, I didn't know how this thing worked, so I hid my first year in a woman's meeting, okay? And I only went one day a week for a whole solid year. Every Tuesday I went in there, and I bitched about people eating sunflower seeds, people having too many tattoos, your hair's too big, what the hell. And 6 months in, I swear to God, I didn't know what I was going to do, okay? And this lady pulls me outside, and she says, this is when they were just not as nice there now, but anyway, she says, you know what, Sloan? If it takes 20 miles to march into the woods, it's going to take 20 miles to march out. You want everything now, and it's not a now thing. And it's going to take a while. You did your disease for a long time. Okay, so I came out of there, and I learned things like that. And so on my first year birthday, I hadn't read the book. I did have someone sponsor me. She found out who my son was, and he did her class. She fired me immediately, because this little guy's an asshole, you know? He's in my story. Anyway, and then she fired me, so I asked the soda chef to be my sponsor. And she turned me down, so I got rejected. So alcoholics don't like rejection. And so I was real happy when she went out in 2.5 years. That's kind of how I felt. Don't judge me, that's where I was at that time. And anyway, and then I went up to Three Rivers where I met Ellie. I've been sponsoring Ellie for over 20 years. We journeyed this thing together, and I met Ellie up there, and I hit up in Three Rivers. I went up there every Monday, really. That was my home group, and I went up there every week. And then it basically kind of, you know, kicked me out of there as well. But on my first year of birthday, when they went around, most of the time, you know, we're celebrating, hugging you and thinking, all this is great. They just said, we don't know how you did it. We just don't know how you are still here. You know, there was no celebration because I wasn't doing anything. I just wasn't drinking. That's it. And I was a nut of that mess. Now, let me tell you where the nut of that mess really fell. It fell at home. It was tragic at that home. I may not have been drinking, but every night when I walked in that house, it was the biggest F-U fight with that one son of mine. I mean, it was F-U. No, F-U. I mean, and I was just, I just hated him, and I just hated the whole scene. I actually called juvenile hall and said, come take him. They said, we don't want him. You know, I'm stuck with him. He's a jerk. My other son, you know, my daughter. I mean, it was just all so much. And I kept, and then I started going around to the meetings, and I started complaining, and I just kept, you know, what am I going to do about the son? And then I finally did get a sponsor, he told me to work the test, and I got Shirlene. Remember Frank and Shirlene? A lot of you guys remember Shirlene. She was my sponsor for a lot of years. And Shirlene helped me walk through the steps, and I finally did the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to tell you, this is my version of 1, 2, and 3. 1, 2, and 3 was amazing to me. I mean, I drove around drunk knowing that I was an alcoholic. That wasn't hard to find a myth, you know? And so when you get 1, 2, 3, it's like, it's the excitement that, you know, isn't it nice when you finally quit drinking and you start to remember things and then you finally go around telling people that, you know, I was alcoholic and they go, yeah, I know. You know, and you think that they're telling them some new stuff, and they're like, oh yeah. So that was so, yeah, I got those stories too. But anyway, I saw this New Year's celebration thing, and I turned that around so I keep looking at that instead of thinking. Anyway, oh gosh. How many of you have ever done this up here? It seems a little difficult. But anyway, that's kind of my name in life, and I started working through the steps. Now, one of the things, 1, 2, 3 is exciting for this. It's like getting them, it's like we finally get a car. Yay, we got a car. And we're all getting the car, and we're going to go for a ride. So we're all excited that we're sober, and life is great, and things get better. But let me tell you what, that's all you're doing is sitting in the car. Okay? Because steps 4 through 12 is when you finally get to drive the car. That's when you start heading down the road. Those of you who are new, please don't stop. The steps are designed to be worked. Not in a year, I'm here to tell you. Because I was going nuts. My family was nuts with me. I was going nuts. And even though I was sober and I was running around claiming 3 years, oh, I got 3 years, I got to be a parrot in here. I got to hear your stories and I got to be able to repeat them. And people were quietly convinced that I might know something. But what was happening up here and what was happening here and what was being demonstrated in my life, none of it matched at all. So it was very, very important for me to say, to remind myself to continue to share the need to work the steps. And you've got to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, because there's where the magic is, you know? So anyway, I'm going to tell you some of this magic that happened to me. So I worked my 4 steps. I'm going to make a great recommendation on 4 steps. I decided to do my 4 step while I was back east on a trip of some sort for work. And I did my 4 step in this room in Florida, for God's sake. I kept thinking that the maid was reading it, you know? I mean, why? Don't make it some big elaborate, you got to do it a certain way or whatever. Just get it done. Get it done. It's designed to take away those things that made you feel so bad about yourself that you drank over. I had 3 things in my life that made my life horrible, and I drank over those things all the time. And when I did my 4 step and I told my sponsor, those things haunted me no more, and they never haunt me again. And that's what the magic is in these steps. Now let me tell you where the other steps started working for my life. As I continued to complain about the children of mine with anybody who would listen to me, I finally had someone, John, with a big belt buckle in AA, say, you know, son, you need to just shut up, okay? You need to do something. We're really sick of hearing you talk about your kids. So I went and hired a therapist, and he's in the program, and I had to pay this guy money. And I took that son of mine and me to him, and after a couple of sessions, he called me in there, and I explained to him what an asshole he was, you know, and that my life would be much easier if he wouldn't be one, you know, and if he would just be better, I could treat him better. And I had to pay this guy money to say, you know what, he's a great kid, you're the problem. And I had to write a check for that, by the way. And he says, I suggest you get with your sponsor and work your steps. Because I had stopped at 5. I hadn't done the 7 and the 8. You know? I haven't done the 6 and 7 when you look at your character defects. And you look at your part. I got a sponsor that I know what I'm going to hear the minute I call her. What is your part? Okay? And I know she's going to have me right, and I know, but here's the magic of all that, is there's 4 things alcoholics suffer with, a whole bunch. And we suffer with fear, we suffer with selfishness, we suffer with resentment, and we suffer with fear, selfishness, resentment, and there's one more. What is it? Selfishness, fear, resentment. Huh? Whatever. Okay. 3 of the 4. I'm doing good. I'm very good. It'll come. It's memory. Hey, I turned 60 this year. Okay? Yeah. So I'm going to pull that senior trump card every once in a while. All right. So anyway, it's in those things. So anyway, this son of mine, my sponsor, you know, so I had to start treating him better. And I did. I went home and I started practicing these principles in all my prayers with me, and it started at home. It's easy to be nice to you guys. It's easy to have AA and, you know, barbecues and the fun part. And I love those parts about Alcoholics Anonymous. But pretty soon I had to quit using you guys as a dating service and a means to have a social life. I had to pretty soon have to change this thing to be what's going to keep me alive and keep the relationship with my children. And so I start practicing that thing in that area of my life. And I got to tell you today, all those little ungrateful children are men. And that one that gave me all the problems is 36 years old and 13 years of sobriety. Okay? And he loves me. We hated each other, and he loves me. And the other one, I just got one that has 3 years. And so it is a family disease. But then I got the little normie daughter. What the hell is that? Okay, so her dad, I got multiple daddies. Her dad was, when he died, he had 13 years of sobriety. And he was one of those Betty Ford guys. You know, they think their sobriety is a little higher notch than yours. Sometimes, and I used to teach it, you know. But I'll tell you one thing. That guy showed me what Alcoholics Anonymous looked like. And when I was in the worst of my drinking and everything, he just showed me. And when he came and did his amends to me, he got back into my daughter's life and into my life, and he showed me what sober looks like. He was a real great pillar for me to see the attraction to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, anyway, so I moved from Fresno to do a job and blah, blah, blah. I moved from Vitale to Fresno. And I had to get into this, into a new group, because I loved Visalia. I went to a lot of my meetings were here, and I loved the fellowship in Visalia, but to go to a new area was really, really hard. So I started going to the 7 a.m. morning meetings in Fresno, Palm and Shaw. Well, every Wednesday they had a character defect day. That was the topic. I went there 5 days a week. 5 days a week, 7 a.m. every morning. Never got called on except for on character defect day. Okay? Kind of pissed me off. I didn't know the extent that I had wisdom on it or I still need to work on them. All right? So anyway, so then I found Carol. I got Carol as my sponsor. And I was all excited about that because Charlene passed. And that was really sad. Well, anyway, I get Carol, and we go to the restaurant to do that, you know, share that thing and talk to each other. And I had a huge resentment about that mama of mine because we never had healed it up, you know, we never had fixed it out with each other. And she was back in Kansas City. And I remember telling Carol about my mama. And you know, and I said, one of these days, she needs to tell me she's sorry. And you know what? Carol looked at me and she said, your mama doesn't know you. Owe you nothing. You are the one with the resentment. You're the one who needs to treat her better. And she owes you nothing. There's nothing she needs to give you. And all of a sudden, I got it. And I went and I booked a flight to Kansas City to go see my mama. And I went there for one purpose only, to love her, to care about her, and to just be respectful and kind. Because that's what you people have taught me to do. So I started changing how I behave and how I treat people. So I went there to my mom, and my mother has never ever told me she was sorry she was drunk. My mother never ever apologized for the it's a huge story, my mama's story, okay? And I went there only to do those things. And we were sitting on two little rocking chairs and rocking. And my mother, out of nowhere, turns to me and she goes, I am really sorry for the lousy mother I've been and the lousy lad that I dragged you through. And I just sat there and it was the most touching moment in my life. And she said, but don't ask me any more than that, okay? I don't want to explain it again. She did it with an asterisk explaining it at the end. But you know, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. Then the other thing that it's taught me is that when you go to make the amends, you know, don't you love the amends you do? You run around. I did. You know, I worked here at the bank, and I went to make amends to these ladies because I was really not. Anyway, I owed everybody a lot of amends. And don't you love the ones you make amends to? And they don't quite respond to you the way you wanted them to. So you think if you recracked it, and come back again, maybe in another day you might be in a better mood, and you do it again, and you don't quite get the answer again, okay? And so I kept doing that manipulative, you know, amends, and then pretty soon, you know, I learned that that's not how you do it. And so what's really cool is that the three women that, well, two of them that really could not stand me, and the men was like, uh-huh, you know, they give you that look like, yeah, right, you know. I got to sit with them about 2 months ago in a business deal. I hadn't seen them in like 15 years, and I got to sit across from them. And you know what I loved about that? I got to sit across from them being a new woman. I'm not the same woman who kept trying to make these false amends, these fake amends and all this stuff. And you know what? They're kind of looking at me. I said, yeah, I'm still sober. You know? Because I could tell. They were like, you know, because a lot of people start this, but they don't finish it. So anyway, then I only have 10 minutes, 10, well, 5, 10 minutes. Okay, so this is the best part about Alcoholics Anonymous I absolutely love. First of all, the part that gets missed that we don't talk about a lot, and I, at least in some of the meetings I am, and the part that I love that transformed my whole walk in Alcoholics Anonymous is step 11, prayer and meditation. You want to change it up? You want it to be different? That's where it gets different. If you read about it in the book, if you read about it in 12 and 12, it tells you that. It says most people will just, that's what's going to transform you. I mean, not going to 40 meetings in 40 days. Yeah, you can stay sober. That's true. But if you don't do the steps and you don't figure out the prayer and meditation, now my idea of meditation was you got to get stoned and you got to wear something white, okay? That's how I came from the 70s, kids. I mean, that's how we did meditation. You know, the Beatles showed us how to do it, okay? So it got pretty crazy, you know, trying to figure this out. But I started listening, and I started seeing the hindsight and the foresight. Now, if I am pissing you off at all, I am your gift. I am your gift. I'm a mirror of what you need to work on, you know, because that's how this program works. What I absolutely love is that there's hindsight in this room, and there's foresight in this room. You can see where you can go and see where you never want to go back to. I mean, we're here to journey this together. And step 10 and 11 and 12 is the magic that does that for us. Like I said, 1, 2, and 3 is fabulous. It is the most amazing thing to find out and be honest with yourself and know that you are an alcoholic. But the part that really, really will change and manifest your life into a different person is when you actually pick up the book and you practice those things. And you start looking at, you know what, you start looking at what your part is, and life is lived in the moment. One thing I have journeyed and learned very quickly is that my frickin' brain is like a whack-a-mole game. I mean, it is one thing coming up after another. My goal in life is to drive from my house to work without calling someone a dumbass. That is my goal, okay? I want to tell you, if I was here 2 weeks ago, I had a real spiritual little thing going on, life was pretty easy, but this last week, it was not a good week. I had a rough week. So no matter how many years you have in this program, you face life. Okay, I face life. I had a cat piss all over my brand new patio furniture in the back. How do you stay spiritual in a moment like that? Okay? Then, alright, then I have dinner with my sister, who she's one of those who you make an amends to, and they warp you in that moment that when you threw the beer can at them. They can't get past that. And they treat you like that for the rest of your life. You guys just got to remember, not everyone is thrilled to death that you are sober, okay? Especially those kids of mine were really pissed off because I didn't give them the keys anymore, all right? Because they would wait for me until I got to that certain buzz level. They knew that was time to stealth in to get the keys for me because I wanted to get them out of my... No, yeah, go ahead, take the keys. All right, so the sister pissed me off. Because she's treating, you know, she can't get past that stuff. So then the cat pissed on it. So in my career, I work on computers. I do programming and stuff. I know you can't put it together yet, but anyway, I do programming. And so I'm working on a server back in the Netherlands, and I only have a window at this time to get it, and I jump on the computer to do this work because I have to get it done because I'm going back to school. I'll talk about that in a minute. And the servers are down. And I'm like, you know? Okay, so I think, so I call my daughter, and she says, you know, it can't get any worse. It's downhill, you know? Well, it didn't get downhill. So I go to open up the, you know, and the covers break, and, you know, and so I said, okay, you know, I might as well take a gun to this fight. I'll go weigh myself. And see if I lost any weight. I gained 10 pounds. What the fuck? I mean, I was like, and I'm like, okay, now here's the good news for this whole fat story. I didn't drink, I didn't drug, and I know how to tell the truth. Oh, the fourth thing, yeah. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about that fourth thing. Because that fourth thing, what's going to keep you sober? Because if ever I see anyone goes out in this program, it's because they get sneaky and they get dishonest. Because the dishonesty is what is the crap we love to do. All right, so I had a lesson. You know, I don't have the kind of life that you sit at the lunchroom in the office and talk with other people. You know, I had hateful kids. I had kids that have stories about me running down the street saying, come back here so I can kick your ass. I mean, I have, I taught a son how to duck when I throw beer cans out the window. I mean, my kids at Christmas, the stories that they bring up and remind me of what I used to do when I was drinking. You know, the gifts that I used to give under being drunk. You know, when did I want Birkenstocks? What the hell is this? You know? I didn't ask for that. You know, that's the kind of life that they had. And so anyway, and I have learned you need to be honest, rigorously honest. Every time I don't want to tell someone the truth, I call Carol and I tell her the truth. And you need to find that person. I don't care. It doesn't need to be a sponsor. It doesn't need, you need to have some place where you tell the truth. You do not keep it in your head. It's actually a whack-a-mole game where you're trying to hit all the resentment and everything. Because I'm going to tell you what. I love a saying that someone said, and I'm going to probably mess it up because I've messed up a couple things tonight, is that what you think of me is not... What I think of you is not going to kill me. It's what I think you think of me, which is the thing that makes me nuts. So that part of my life where I live in my head, which is not real, that is where you learn how to just let it go through. You do not need to give it, you know, a cool drink and a couch to sit on. You know, you need to just let it pass through. We will not stop the thought. We will not. It's just, we're not designed to. But what we can stop is what we feed them. Because you feed them by your voice, you feed them by the way you behave, and you feed them by what you say. Because you'll keep it alive. So watch what you say. Because that is very critical when we're getting sober. And the other part is, I had a lot of lessons. And I didn't feel good about myself. About a lot of things. 10 pounds for one. Okay, so what I did was 5 years ago, I had this wonderful woman say, I felt less than because I didn't have a degree. And she says, well, what do you want to be, 60 with a degree or 60 without a degree? So I put myself back in school and I'm going to be graduating in March with a degree. At the age of 60. Okay? I want to straighten those kids out in that classroom more than you ever know. I just want to say, again, WTF, what are you thinking, you know? So anyway, I am grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I'm going to wrap it up with step 12. This is the magic when we share and walk this thing together. I'll never forget the first time I walked in a room and I saw the woman who had those same ugly kids as mine. They're not ugly, actually my children are quite attractive. But they were just mean. But anyway, I didn't like them, they didn't like me, but today I love them and they love me. I have, those kids of mine procreated like hell. I have 6 grandchildren that have never seen their grandma drink. And I have one that's 21 years of age you know, and I have one that's 7. I'm 7 to 21, and I'm in their life today. I was at a football game in Vice A. This is last week. Some of them live here, some of them live in Fresno. And I got to tell you, I wouldn't have this life if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have this life if it wasn't for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have this life if I didn't get these hugs up here. Because you got to remember, ladies and gentlemen, for you that are new, we all have 30 days at one time. I'm not doing anything different today than you are doing to not drink. That's the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. That book isn't something we're holding back from you. We'll give you the good stuff later. That thing is for you today, now. That is what Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to do, to change your life today. And you can do that by just living in the moment, trusting God, and He will send you, when you ask for help, He will send you the most annoying people in the whole wide world to teach you things. Because it is, they are the direct reflection of what you need to work on. You know, arrogant people piss me off. And by golly, I got them all in my life to show me I was arrogant. Okay, so I had to learn to tone it down, girl, tone it down. So anyway, I've got 1 minute to say thank you for inviting me here. Thank you for one more time. You know, some of you are going to come up afterwards and say, oh, great. And some of you are going to say, keep coming back, girl. I had a nickname called Cleo, Queen of Denial, for my first 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous because I just was in so much denial about everything. But anyway, today I love this program. I love the people I walk with. I love the women I know in this program, Kim and Shane over here, and Ellie. And I even have an ex-boyfriend in here that we like each other. Still as friends. And, you know, and this program is just amazing what it does for you. It really is. And so I hope you find what you need to find and keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.